welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley reporting from Washington, D.C. Two big things going on right now on the foreign policy front and in the world of economics. Let's just look briefly at the foreign policy front. The cry of death to Russia and death to China was chanted by the fanatical supporters today of Ayatollah Rafsanjani, Mr. Corruption, Mr. Bazaar. Death to Russia, death to China, coming from the Rafsanjani Mousavi clique at Friday prayers, followed then by a riot in which the anti-Russian, anti-Chinese mob clashed with the security forces, the Basiji, and the Pasdaran Revolutionary Guards. So this faction fight is now out in the open, and the hand of Zbigniew Brzezinski, the hand of Soros, the hand of the soft power clique, the hand of the color revolutions, CIA people power coups, velvet revolutions, destabilizations, subversion, and all the rest could not be more evident. The supporters of Ahmadinejad at this meeting were chanting death to America. The supporters of Rafsanjani and Mousavi chanting hysterically, fanatically, death to Russia, death to China. And there it is. That's what I've been telling you for the past 18 months. The Brzezinski Soros soft power clique is determined to use Iran as a tool, as a kamikaze puppet, a totally expendable international asset and proxy against the dominant Eurasian powers, Russia and China. Iran becomes the spear point, the continental dagger for the Anglo-Americans in the struggle against the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. That's if they can take power, big if. Now they're out in the open. They have exposed themselves. Obviously, the cover story for why they're chanting death to Russia, death to China is on the one hand regarding Russia. You remember that at the height of the attempt to steal that election, the hysterical campaign by the Anglo-American mass media that there had been some kind of vote fraud, that who wouldn't vote for Mousavi? Well, Mousavi was, of course, the people's choice with his demand for privatization and internet freedom and all the rest of this. Who wouldn't go for that? More globalization he wanted. At the height of that, you'll remember that Ahmadinejad went to a meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and was photographed very cordially shaking hands with Russian President Medvedev. So that's the immediate Russian side, is that the mob, the rioters, the ruckus society of North Tehran, the rich elitists and desperate housewives wearing their masks, right? The masses out there in the street, the ochlocracy of North Tehran, the color revolution based on the rich, they were all very much against Russia because of the support they perceive for Ahmadinejad now. And at the same time, you've then also got China. And as we pointed out last week, one of the reasons why the CIA and MI6 wanted to have that big massacre of hundreds of Chinese in Urumqi out there in Xinjiang province in Chinese Turkestan is because based on that, you've now got a diplomatic crisis going between China on the one hand and Iran, Turkey, and other countries on the other. So the Chinese having, and indeed Pakistan, tensions there too. So tensions between China and the Islamic world follow on this cynical CIA provocation, with, of course, the key role being played by Rabia Kadir, K-A-D-E-E-R, the World Uyghur Congress, based here in wealthy Fairfax, Virginia. And, of course, she's on the payroll of the National Endowment for Democracy, who give officially above ground $550,000 of your tax dollars go to pay for Uyghur terrorists. And now we see why. Because based on that provocation, and this is how you can manipulate the mob, right? The mob is suggestible. And the Mousavi Rafsanjani mob is now out there chanting, death to Russia, death to China. Well, QED, I rest my case. This is what they wanted. And if that crew ever took power, I've been telling you for the last couple of weeks, if Mousavi and Rafsanjani ever got back to power, one of the first things they would do is find a reason to cut off the oil deliveries to China, because that's the name of the Anglo-American game. The U.S.-British imperialist position is now so weak that even peaceful trade, what normally people would say is always good, right? Let's not have war. Let's have peaceful economic cooperation, trade, mutually beneficial. No, 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 say the Anglo-Americans. We don't want that. We've got to strangle the Chinese in their need for overseas oil, overseas raw materials. Therefore, they have to target Pakistan, the energy corridor, target Sudan as a source of oil, target Zimbabwe, where a lot of the minerals come from, target basically the Chinese presence in Africa. And that was the underlying theme of Obama's speech there in Ghana about 10 days ago. So that's very big. Death to Russia, death to China, say the Rafsanjani Mousavi people. Death to America, say the Ahmadinejad people. Now, it is clear that what is shaping up in Iran is a clash between Ahmadinejad and his supporters on the one side, and the more or less, the overwhelming majority of the clerical establishment. So Ahmadinejad against the mullahs, Ahmadinejad against the ayatollahs, Ahmadinejad against the clerical establishment. And this gets you into the geometry of Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the great, on my short list of the greatest statesmen of the 20th century, up there with De Gaulle and Roosevelt and Sun Yat-sen and so forth. Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, one of the greats, the only country that was defeated in World War One that didn't go fascist was Turkey under Atatürk. So Atatürk is a very current figure in many parts of the world. Remember, Musharraf in Pakistan tried to present himself as the new Atatürk. He didn't make it. Ahmadinejad obviously doesn't have the sophistication, the intelligence that you would need to be a full Atatürk, at least at this point. But it looks to me like events are forcing us now into this geometry. Ahmadinejad, in order to survive, is going to have to dump these corrupt, parasitical, and bigoted mullahs, who, of course, are the ones who interfere in everybody's life. They shake you down for money, and then they harass the women because of what they wear. And this is a lot of the friction between the Iranian masses and the regime. Just think, if you could dump those mullahs, get rid of them, send them all back to the holy city of Qom, then you would have a situation where a lot of the friction, a lot of the discontent could be at least mitigated, neutralized, palliated in the short term. So Ahmadinejad evolving towards a more or less classic military, bureaucratic, authoritarian dictatorship, that looks like the way it's going. And Rafsanjani just provoked a riot with his lunatic supporters chanting death to Russia, death to China. That's a tall order. Death to Russia, death to China. The death to America, of course, by now is just it's an old cliche. This doesn't exactly pull anybody out of their chair over there. But death to Russia, death to China. That's something new. And of course, the British, the British feel bad because they had been promoted to the great Satan above the U.S. by Khamenei in the past couple of weeks, right? The British role, the BBC subversion, the BBC Persian language radio and Persian language TV had attracted all of that resentment. So death to Russia, death to China. Brzezinski's gaining traction, but at the same time, he's exposed. And this analysis that you heard here is confirmed.
Public Radio.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Now we have to turn from the death to China, death to Russia, chanting by the Rafsanjani Mousavi mob of street fighters and hooligans in Tehran today, Friday, the 17th of July, as we're recording. Let's now switch to the economic front. Now, you'll remember Oliver Cromwell, the villainous dictator of England during the English Civil War, tried to wipe out Christmas and Easter and all the other holidays in the Christian calendar at the time. Now we have Obama, for the first dictator or would-be dictator of the English-speaking world, to undertake an attack on Christmas, and you're going to see how. This has to do with CIT factors, and we're going to put this in context for you first. Let's just get the economic overview. This past week, we've had hysteria in the stock market. The Anglo-Americans have convinced themselves that the worst is over, that the recession is over, that we're headed towards singing tomorrows. And the basis of this is the earnings reports from a series of banks. We've had J.P. Morgan Chase reporting this week. Goldman Sachs have reported. Bank of America have reported. Citibank have reported. And the news is good, if you believe it, which, of course, here we don't. What we've got on the public side of it, right, the surface of things, the empiricist view, is that J.P. Morgan has reported $2.72 billion in profits in the most recent quarter. Goldman, even more than that. Goldman, what, $3 to $4 billion? You can check the figure online. But Goldman Sachs says they have had the best quarter ever. Bank of America and Citibank, while not equally rosy, are much better than anybody thought. So, it looks like prosperity is just around the corner. The green shoots are everywhere. Not so fast. Notice what this is based on. It's based above all on the idea that instead of having to take all of your toxic, cancerous, fictitious, bloated derivatives and mark them to market, meaning zero or something asymptotically approaching zero, they've now got to, they can do whatever they want. They can market to model. You can market to a model, or you can market to a supermodel. You can claim your derivatives are worth whatever you want, because you just take out your Black Scholes, you soup that up a little bit with some overdrive in there. You can claim whatever you want. There's also word that Citibank, in particular, has been padding their balance sheet with asset sales. They've sold off a brokerage or two. And otherwise, they're all profiting, of course, from the fact that Bear Stearns has gone into the great beyond, and Lehman Brothers has gone into the great beyond. Actually, Bear Stearns has been phagocytated, that is to say, gobbled up by J.P. Morgan Chase. So lifeboat ethics, there are a couple of people that have been thrown out of the lifeboat, so those, or maybe they've been cannibalized by those who remain. So that competition is gone. Naturally, J.P. Morgan claims that they have paid off their TARP money. Goldman Sachs claimed that they have paid off their TARP money. But make no mistake, all of these banks continue to get money from the government. That's from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and from the Federal Reserve. They're getting cheap federal credit for speculators. That's our regime now. We have subsidized cheap federal credit for speculators through the Federal Reserve, through helicopter Ben Bernanke, for J.P. Morgan, Goldman, Bank of America, Citibank, and so forth. These are the four leading zombie banks. I don't want to forget about Wells Fargo, Bank of New York, Mellon. They also qualify as leading zombies. And the reason we know that they're zombies is, as everybody agrees, credit is not flowing. There is no lending. And there is no borrowing. A lot of people, these zombie banks are simply incapable of lending. They have to focus on their own proprietary trading. That's what we see with J.P. Morgan. It's the investment bank. It's the speculative desk, the proprietary trading, the derivatives, the energy trading, speculation of all sorts. That's where they get their money. Their commercial banking side looks pretty sick. And with Goldman, we have a window into that. high-frequency trading. There's been some question of a special super-duper computer sales program, which robs you before you even know what's going on. It works with light speed, warp speed. Goldman Sachs can pick your pocket at warp speed using this super modern high frequency trading program, a computer program. We know about this because it's allegedly one of the programs has been stolen. So Goldman is the quickest on the draw on the street. Of all the gunslingers in Wall Street, Goldman Sachs is the quickest. So the notion that the market is rigged is gaining ground, right? The little people should not be in that rigged market, certainly. So this is the picture that they want you to see. And naturally, when the stock market sees that, they become hysterical. They've got new gurus out there. They've got new this woman analyst who was able to predict that Goldman's result would be much better than anybody thought, and this then leads to a hysterical rally and so forth. Every time you see the stock market go up like that, 7% on the S&P up in 1 week, this makes you wonder, is that the beginning of hyperinflation? Because hyperinflation is coming, and one of the ways you're going to see it is if the stock market begins to take off, there's going to be a phase of euphoria until people realize by the time you get to Dow 35,000, as Glassman predicted some years back, you'll get there, but you'll get there by way of hyperinflation. And your Dow 35,000 will be matched by, you know, $500 for a gallon of milk or $1,000 for a gallon of milk. So that can easily be coming, really, at any time. Once again, we are between the first wave of the Depression and the second wave. We are between October 1929 U.S. stock market crash, an important event, a detonator, and a much more important worldwide event, which was the British defaulting on gold, the Bank of England ceasing gold payment in September 1931, destroying the only system we had at that time in the world for the financing of world trade, the pound sterling bill of exchange drawn on London. Once that was blown up, then world trade collapsed. Now, the British obviously want to deflect attention from that. The British always want to tell you, oh, holy smoot, U.S. protectionism did it, strangled world trade. Baloney. It was the default of the British pound, September 1931, that blew up the world monetary system. The responsibility goes on the account of London, of the city of London. So we're between those. Remember, in the U.S. then there was a third wave, 1932 to 1933, a banking crisis which shut down every bank in the country. They were all shut down by the time Roosevelt came in. And all he did with the bank holiday was to legalize and make orderly what had been chaotic and largely illegal. So we'll be back in a minute.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
World Crisis Radio, Webster Toffee reporting from Washington, D.C. Now, the hysteria in Wall Street, the end of the recession and the beginning of a new bubble, which is what they all want. They need it. They're hysterically devoted to it. This contrasts, of course, quite crudely with the continuing collapse of the U.S. physical economy. Remember it? The physical economy looks like this. New word this week that foreclosures continue to increase. Foreclosures are now worse than ever. Obama's program of paying money to the predatory mortgage lenders of the Mozilla countrywide stripe, with the most money, of course, going to J.P. Morgan Financial. That has been a failure as far as people are concerned. The bankers, of course, have used it as yet another channel to rake in ill-gotten gains, rent-seeking. Bankers at the public trough. So that's the foreclosure story. I think it's 1.5 million so far this year and heading upwards anyway. We'll check the figures in the coming weeks. 10% of U.S. homeowners who have mortgages are now in arrears 1, 2, 3 months, and they're on their way to foreclosure. The estimate now is about, 11 to 12% of the U.S. population lives on food stamps, $125 per month for a single person, $250 for a family. I ask our Austrian friends, what should happen to these people? You don't like the nanny state? If 10% of your population, 11% or 12%, is living on food stamps, what should happen? Should they die for the greater glory of the free market, for the ghost of von Hayek, von Mises, and Milton Friedman, and these other crackpots? Well, I hope not, because that's in that case, we then move to the Nuremberg side of the ledger. We've also got 10%, or almost 10%, officially unemployed. That means 16% officially underemployed and unemployed. And if it's 16%, according to the government figures, that is those who are unemployed and underemployed, that really means 20 to 25% unemployed. So we are in one heck of a depression. World trade down 30 to 40% from this time last year. Now, let's look at the biggest attack on Christmas since Oliver Cromwell, being carried out now by Obama, Geithner, Summers, and Sheila Bair. Don't forget her over at the FDIC, right? Every Friday we have to remember her because she didn't shut down J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, Bank of America, and Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley. Morgan Stanley, by the way, that we got to give credit where credit is due. They have come up with a new form of derivative. Yes, a new form of derivative from Morgan Stanley. It's called the CLO. It's not a collateralized. It used to be CDO, collateralized debt obligation, but now because that obviously got a bad rap along with credit default swaps. It's now a CLO, a collateralized loan obligation. So Morgan Stanley, got to get the Morgan straight. Morgan Stanley is now here to tell you that a CLO, a new derivative, which is of course the old CDO in drag, in a disguise for Halloween, they're here to tell you that a CLO is something fresh and new. So the impulse for derivatives is incorrigible. These people are like alcoholics, heroin addicts. The only thing they can do is derivatives. And, of course, AIG wants to give $250 million of taxpayer money, because that's what it is, to these brilliant quants, these brilliant yuppie quants, these experts in Black Scholes and other models that are used to claim what the values of derivatives are. They could hire me for almost nothing. They're worthless. They have negative value. They're like the Rasputnik in the Al Cap cartoon. But even Jamie Dimon, the chief figurehead of the current corporate state, I guess we have to call it a fascist corporate state because that's pretty much what it is. Jamie Dimon has written an op-ed, a recent opinion piece. Jamie Dimon warned against overly restrictive regulations on the sales of derivatives, which can be used to manage financial risks or to gamble. J.P. Morgan Chase is one of the largest participants in that market, the derivatives market. Yes, you're right. This is from the Washington Post of today, Friday, July 17th. Yes, indeed. J.P. Morgan Chase is the premier derivatives monster of the world, and whatever total of derivatives there is in the world, 1.5 quadrillion is still the best guess we have. You can figure that J.P. Morgan Chase is up there with about, one-third to one-fourth of that entire total. So this is a black hole capable of sucking in the entire known universe. Naturally, even the timid ridiculous milquetoast reforms on derivatives proposed by Geithner, not acceptable to Jamie Dimon. But now let's look at how this corporate state works. Remember, the corporate state is a compulsory state-sponsored cartel for the purpose of driving down production, driving down wages, and propping up fictitious speculative capital in the form mostly today of derivatives, but also other kinds of speculative excesses. Now, this has been done in Detroit, right? Whatever these right-wing nutcases think they see, what's going on there is the corporate state, not socialism, not communism. It's the fascist corporate state. It's different. The idea now is you can see Detroit production going down. The wages and benefits have been driven down to the level of the Southern right-to-work, Taft-Hartley sweatshop economy. The UAW has essentially voted itself out of existence, and the right-wing commentators think that Barkey has done a favor for the UAW by looting their health care fund to the tune of $6 billion, which was then transferred to J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs, and also then by essentially driving down their wages and their benefits packages. That's just great. With those kinds of friends, you don't need enemies. So, but now let's look at the current moment. Remember, in the corporate state, the government, the regime, picks winners and losers. Now, the winners are quite obvious. J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs are the key winners in some ways because they represent the worst derivatives and speculative excesses. Let's look at some of the losers. Right? We've had Washington Mutual as a loser. We've had other people as losers. Bank of America, to some degree, a loser, forced to eat the losses of Merrill Lynch. That was a big hearing this past week with Paulson testifying, Bernanke testifying. By the way, Bernanke, of course, is a gangster. He should be impeached. What more do we need? They don't even need an audit to know that. It'd be nice to audit him and get the evidence. But start impeaching Bernanke, and then you can audit the Fed at the same time. But now let's look at CIT, because this gets us into the area of how economics actually works. CIT, what is this? This is a fairly large finance operation. It is about one-eighth the size of Lehman Brothers, which means it's substantial. If it blows, as it seems like it's going to blow, this will be the largest bank failure in the U.S., or the largest failure of a financial institution since Lehman Brothers, since last September, and the tremors on this are simply huge. The zombie banks, as we've been saying, long ago gave up providing credit for industry, for commerce, for trade, or for anything else. They do derivatives, and they do their own proprietary trading speculation. So that means there's this whole area where finance is necessary, and the big banks won't do it. So who does it? CIT is the leading example of a company which operates in that area, which has been increasingly abandoned by these other ones. Manufacturers Hanover used to do some of this stuff. So CIT has now got a $7.5 billion hole in its books. They've gotten $2 billion off the top. They're still about to go bankrupt, and Obama, Geithner, Summers want to drive them bankrupt. Tell you why in just a minute.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
World Crisis Radio, Esther Tarpley in Washington, D.C. Now, let's look at CIT, again, in the context of the biggest attack on Christmas since Oliver Cromwell, now being carried out by the Obama regime. CIT are factors. They provide financing for merchandise, for commerce. This is commercial capital. Obama loves finance capital. Obama destroys industrial capital, and now you're going to see him destroy commercial capital. This is retail sales. This is how clothing and other merchandise, consumer electronics too, get into stores. We are now right in the key period where you got to start shipping the stuff that's going to be available for the Christmas holiday, the biggest sales season of the year, right? We've got this sick, sick, sick economy with two-thirds or three-quarters of everything is consumer sales, and now that's going to be destroyed. I mean, it's a sick situation to begin with, but this is going to make it worse. Now, what does it mean to be a factor? These terms come out in the common used to be in the New York City Garment Center, and that's exactly the area where CIT operates. The basic thing is they deal with about a million small business and medium-sized companies who need to ship goods into retail stores, above all, clothing, shoes, everything like that that's left here in the United States. About 60%, almost two-thirds of that, goes through CIT. They have clients which include Dell Computer, Dunkin' Donuts, and Dillard's Stores. We're told that as CIT approaches bankruptcy, production is ceasing at certain places that can no longer ship. The Greg Norman clothing line, I think, has halted production. Doorie, D-O-O-R-I, this is some other kind of merchandise, has halted production. Craftsman Furniture is going to be in big trouble. And essentially what it is this. These are bills of lading and bills of exchange. This is classic financing done by a factor, done by a company that provides short-term credit. When you ship clothing to a store so it gets on the rack by Christmas, this stuff is generally payable in 90 days. So 90 days equals cash, except, of course, it doesn't equal cash. If I'm a clothing manufacturer and I ship $1 million of clothes to Macy's or something else, or Dell Computer needs to ship computers, you've got to turn that into cash. So what it is the producer, the vendor, the people who are selling this stuff can take their accounts receivable, their bills of lading, right? Because it means I filled up a truck with, $100,000 worth of clothing and sent that to Macy's. That becomes a negotiable piece of commercial paper. So you could take that to CIT and say, look, this is worth $1 million, and CIT would give you $950,000, and the rest of it would be interest that they would keep, right, for the, or whatever it is, right, whatever slice that they get to keep. And this way, you can keep producing. And then finally, the retailers, after 30, 60, 90, or whatever it is, from 3 to 6 months sometimes, pay that back to CIT. Get it? Without this, merchandise does not move. So Dunkin' Donuts, Dell Computers, Dillard's, Greg Norman, Doorie, Craftsman Furniture, and essentially a million others are going to be hit by this. Now, isn't it interesting? Obama, Geithner, and Summers have all the money in the world, with Bernanke, of course. They have all the money in the world for Citibank, J.P. Morgan, the whole crew of zombie bankers. They've got $3.5 billion for the Hartford. They have Prudential, Allstate, MetLife, Lincoln Financial, Ameriprise Financial, Principal Financial, all on the list. Money is available for them if they need it. American Express gets money. All sorts of people get money. But as soon as you get close to real, tangible, physical production, the things that people must have in order to live, oh, no, oh, no, that would create moral hazard. We can't do it. Now, if CIT goes under, as it looks like it will, that means that a lot of goods that were on their way to the shelves for the year-end buying season will not move. And indeed, some of these companies are already shutting down. They're already ceasing production at Greg Norman and Doorie, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. This is the way that Obama's policies are coming into the communities, right? Every community now, you can walk down the street and you'll find a dealership that used to be, we used to have Reed Brothers Dodge in the suburbs here, and they've become a used car lot. So, and that also means that their repair operation is going to be hit hard. So the automobile dealers that have been shut down for no economic reason, but for political reasons, for targeting, and for the idea, that the bankers want to loot the economy. This is a form of asset stripping on the entire economy. That will now kick over from the auto retailers, the automobile dealerships now, to the department stores, the clothing stores, the shoe stores. It's a total wipeout of small business. Now, this stuff is dangerous. What happens to those small business people when they get wiped out? You want to know the political trajectory of such people? Take a look at Germany, Italy, 1920s the 1930s. Let us say that small business people who have been wantonly, deliberately wiped out by a regime in the service of the big banks, like this one, they tend to drift towards, let's say, totalitarian mass movements. Can we say that? Of the type that we saw in Central Europe in the 1920s and 30s. You get the idea. So it's much, much better not to do this to these people also, because this is basically destroying the U.S. economy. So this is the CIT story. They're a loser. And, of course, it means once they're wiped out, then either you go under, or if you're lucky and you're chosen to survive, you can then go to one of these zombie institutions. I'm sure they'll have something there, and you can pay two or three times as much. So it is a process of asset stripping the entire economy, which is now being carried out by a regime in Washington which looks for all the world like a hedge fund. The federal government is now a hedge fund. So this is bad. Now, this gets us into, again, the fact that no credit is flowing. What should be done? Force the Federal Reserve to open a Main Street lending window with a rediscount guarantee for precisely this kind of paper. If you have a bill of lading, if you have a bill of exchange, if you're a clothing producer with accounts receivable, there's got to be a regime where you can go to your local bank and they disgorge that cash because they know they can turn around and send it to the Fed, the nationalized or partially nationalized Fed, and the Fed is forced to rediscount that paper and disgorge cash for the people involved. The rediscount guarantee. So open the Main Street lending window. We've been told all along the bailout of Wall Street was not for the sake of Wall Street. The bailout of Wall Street is because they're the credit engine for the economy. Well, they're not. They're zombie bankers. They sit there and parasitize the rest of the economy. They drive up the price of oil if they can. They trade in derivatives. They're licking their chops waiting for cap and trade, because they want to create a new speculative bubble in those carbon offsets. That's the secret behind that. The guy who designed that is from Goldman Sachs, and he's Geithner's right-hand man. So open the Federal Reserve, nationalize part of it at least. If you can't nationalize all of it, nationalize part of it. Force them to disgorge 0% federal credit for production in this case, for production of shoes, clothing, consumer electronics, and all the other things that CIT has been financing. CIT is probably beyond saving, but just to let it go down, no. Seize it and nationalize it and operate it using 0% federal credit to keep this stuff going. Toss out the management and keep the U.S. economy going. No foreclosures, no shutdowns for these purposes. This is a huge new crime of the Obama regime, as CIT Factor is about to go under, and 1 million retailers across the United States are now quaking in their boots because they are going to get hit. They're not going to have merchandise. They're going to go under. Barkey did it.